I don't know how much attention you pay to Hindi cinema or Hindi film music, but if you are my vintage or even I would say 20 years younger than me, chances are you remember this great fun song from the Dilip Kumar Sara Bano starrer Sagina, 1974 film. It was a remake of the Bengali original Sagina Mahato, celebrated film. So Majrur Sultanpuri wrote the lyrics for this movie, and the line that I remember, that I recall in the context of what this week's national interest is talking about is Aag lagi hamri jhupadiya mein hum gaavai malhar, dekh bhai kitne tamashe ki zindagani hamar. Dilip Kumar sings it. What it means is, it's self-deprecatory. It says, my hut is on fire, my home is on fire, but I'm merrily singing the malhar. Malhar, as you know, is the happy raga of rains. Dekh bhai kitne tamashe ki zindagani hamar. See how much fun my life is and envy me for it. So let's leave it there. I will bring you back to it as we conclude this week's national interest argument. Now, this week actually has been an interesting one because much debate has been there on whether you can criticize the Modi government or not, because the story came out about a group of ministers that was set up to figure out how to control the media. Now, we know that this happened in the month of June when the Chinese had come knocking rudely and we had lost lives and they had lost lives and both armies were piling up tanks and artillery guns, etc., etc. Million plus migrants were walking back home in the great tragedy. Also, India's coronavirus graph was going up like this, like a hockey stick. In the middle of that, government of India, nine ministers in Modi cabinet were holding this flurry of meetings. Anyway, so what was the threat there? The threat there, obviously, a meeting like this, a document it produces, we have the document, at least what's been leaked, that will not say that CBI, ED or other such calamities will come visiting you. Those things happen in silence. Those things are not put in writing. But it held out the grave threat of color-coding journalists. If you are with the government, one color. If you are against the government, one color. If you are fence-sitters, another color, right? Now, so big risk was being color-coded. And then if you were coded the wrong color, terrible things could happen to you. Or at least you could draw that conclusion. But I want to explain this week why our life as political commentators now is rough on both sides. Because we are damned if we criticize or attack the government of the day, because we can be painted in the wrong colors. But we are also cursed if we question the opposition. Because when that happens, the immediate response is, yeah, we know very well. This is what independent media is supposed to do, not question the government of the day, but question the opposition. And it is because of this that I've been also, with my thick skin, I've been frightened of talking about the Congress party, Rahul Gandhi, the state of the opposition for the past several weeks. And week on week, as the party has declined, it's lost its way, its people are leaving. I have, frankly, quite truthfully, been afraid of criticizing it or questioning it, but no longer. I think these questions now have to be asked. So mindful as I am of the hazards of facing the underdog's fire, let me raise a few questions. You see, we are now complaining about, what are the things we are complaining about, or what are the things that say the opposition is complaining about or wants us to complain about vis-a-vis the Modi government? This is undermining of institutions, misuse of the agencies, sectarian and socially discriminatory laws, use of provisions like sedition as if they were parking tickets or chalan for jumping red lights. Anybody who irritates you, sedition dal do uske upar, life sentence. Or railroading legislations through parliament, even setting up a group of ministers, a powerful group of ministers, to control the media or to answer media criticism or to smother media criticism. Would all of this have happened if the Congress party had 100 MPs in the Lok Sabha? It's a cruel question, but it's a question that needs to be asked. Or if the UPA had a strength of about 130-150, Modi government could have still had its majority, but that would have been a credible opposition. Now, in a democracy, the primary accountability for respecting the institutions, citizens' liberty, and constitutional guarantees lies with the ruling party. But it is also the primary responsibility of the opposition party to fight for these. For this, it is also a responsibility of the opposition parties to keep themselves strong, to do their jobs, not to wait that now somebody else is in power, there is no chance of my coming to power, so let me chill meanwhile, ek din power will come to me. It doesn't happen like that. Power doesn't come to you like that. And that is what it looks like has been happening right now to Congress Party. Now, go back and see how the opposition behaved when the Congress Party was in power. Whether it was the Lohiites or it was the BJP, it was even the much tinier Swatantra Party, tiny but very smart MPs and parliamentarians who could argue and who could get facts. Later, the socialists, Jan Sangh and the BJP, they always were at the throat of the ruling party and the government of the day when the Congress was in power. Congress has now been in the opposition a long time. Congress can't say that we have no experience of being in the opposition. They were in the opposition 6 years, Vajpayee rule. They were in the opposition now. They've been in the opposition 7 years in the Modi rule now. So this generation of Congress people has spent half a political lifetime in opposition. So they can no longer say, we don't know how to be opposition leaders. So they can't wait. Now, I will also quote the example of 1984. People say, opposition says, but Modi government has such an overwhelming majority. How can we fight it? Remember, in 1984, Rajiv Gandhi got 413 seats. He swept that election so completely that he boasted after the election, I think in an India Today interview, where he said that for the opposition, we have declared the 10 plus 2 plus 3 formula. Remember, that was the formula for our school and college education. He said 10 plus 2 plus 3. Why? 10, Janata Party, 2, BJP, 3, I think socialists. So 10 plus 2 plus 3. That BJP was left to 2 seats. But within a couple of months, that opposition, completely defeated, wounded, punch drunk, raised itself on its feet and was in the ring and up for a fight. By the middle of 1985, less than within a year of that election, they were also at Rajiv Gandhi's throats. In fact, troubles for Rajiv Gandhi over the Shah Bano case and over Mandal Commission started in 1985 itself. And from there, the opposition built up and made his life impossible until he lost power and majority. And the fact is that since he lost his majority in 1989, the Congress Party has not been able to win a majority in national parliament. Once again, I take you back to Rajiv Gandhi's times. When Rajiv Gandhi got into real trouble, he also got irritated with the media. Every government gets irritated with the media, and every government tries to pull out some dirty tricks to control or discipline the media. So what did Rajiv Gandhi do? He came up with this infamous anti-defamation law. He came up with that bill, and there were protests by journalists. See how the opposition joined those protests. See how strongly did the opposition rise to the media's defense, because defending press freedoms is a low-cost, high-reward business. They knew what was good for them, they did it. The party in the forefront of this was the BJP. Rajiv Gandhi got even more vindictive. He went after the Indian Express. So his goons, Congress goons, actually infiltrated the Indian Express Employees Union and orchestrated a strike in the paper so the paper would stop publishing. This is when Arun Shori was there and the Express was giving him a lot of trouble. At that point, what happened? How did the Express keep coming out? That's because the BJP and RSS overnight moved more than 100 people into the Express building to keep the presses running. Later, when Rajiv Gandhi tried to take over the Express building because he said that Ramnath Goenka had carried out unauthorized construction there, which he probably had, he tried to resume the building or grab the building through Jagmohan, later a BJP minister who used to then work with Rajiv Gandhi. Immediately, volunteers, workers of all these opposition parties who had been down to 10 plus 2 plus 3 came in to defend what? They didn't come in to defend Ramnath Goenka's businesses. They came in to defend media freedoms. Today what happens? Today, undermining of the institutions, sectarian laws, railroading of bills in parliament, attacks on free speech, etc., etc. What does today's opposition do, especially the Congress? They write tweets. They write tweets, and then in every fourth or fifth tweet, they will also taunt the media, one, for not attacking the government enough, as if it is the media's responsibility to remove the government of the day and install Congress Party back in power, or for daring to question the opposition. But as I said earlier, in a democracy, responsibility also lies with the opposition. As I analyze it, if the governments are sins of commission, the oppositions today are the sins of omission. They are just missing in action. They are simply not there, except some tweets that surface every once in a while. Now, you might say, Shekhar Gupta, you just said that you were frightful of the ire of the underdog questioning the opposition party of the day. So what made you give up that fear? What made me give up that fear was these pictures I saw coming out of Kerala last week. These were pictures of Rahul Gandhi swimming with fishermen. Great pictures. As he came out, tip tip barsa pani, because he had got wet, his sort of muscles showed. So then we had this Congress sycophants all swooning and breathlessly excited. Oh, Rahul Gandhi has six packs. What kind of sycophancy is this? After that, you saw Rahul Gandhi in a school, impressing school children with his physical fitness, his muscle power, his push-ups and stuff. Now, I will never trivialize school children. I know how difficult they are to impress. But really, do you want a 50-year-old impressing school children with his muscles and with his fitness? And this is a 50-year-old who still is the de facto leader of the largest opposition party in India, has 50 plus members of parliament, has control of three important states, either directly or in a coalition, as in Maharashtra, is going for elections in five key states, in each one of which his party has a stake. It can win two of them, it can win three of them, it can win Assam, it can win Kerala, it can win Puducherry, that is three. It can help an ally, that is DMK, defeat an ally of the BJP, that is ADMK, in Tamil Nadu. It can help an adversary, that is Mamata Banerjee in West Bengal, defeat a bigger adversary, the enemy's enemy, that is Narendra Modi's BJP, in West Bengal. In the middle of all this, you see him cavorting in Kerala and visiting his constituency, etc., etc., and all his fan followers celebrating these pictures and his muscles and his muscle power. In politics, muscle that matters is the political muscle, votes, seats, voice. Where are you present? When BJP was down to two in Rajiv Gandhi's times, they would fill up Jantar Mantar every third day with protesters. Congress people are either holidaying or writing tweets. And while he is cavorting like this in Kerala, I don't want to deny anybody lighter moments in life. And politics should not be a deadly, serious, boring business. You can have fun in politics. But not when your so-called G23 is meeting in Jammu and pretty much announcing rebellion, when you already have Anand Sharma raising questions on the record about your choice of alliance partners in West Bengal, when you have Ghulam Nabi Azad standing up and praising Narendra Modi again and again. Now, I know what the answers to all this is, because answers to all this will be counter questions. What do these G23 count for? Can they win even a single seat? What are they without the Gandhi family? It's all very true. But then all his party people who are frustrated with him now, they may or may not say so, are not like this. He also has his party's strongest leader right now in his state, that is Amrinder Singh, because he has an overwhelming majority of his own, unlike, say, even in Rajasthan, where the majority is wafer thin and the party there has dissensions. But in Punjab, no. But you have a situation the ultimate irony, where a party with a chief minister with an overwhelming majority is continuously losing all leverage to the extent that he has almost no leverage left in the key issue of the day, which is farmers' protest in his state. Because we know that the real impulse, the real fuel for the farmers' protest is coming from his state in Punjab. He's been left to his own devices. If this carries on like this, you have to put yourself in his jutis and see where he will end up. Either he will lose all his political capital, which is one possibility, or he will get frustrated and look for his options. I am saying this even though I know there is risk of getting angry denials from him. But I don't know his mind. I am only trying to put myself in that position. How can the Congress go on without a real president for so long since Rahul Gandhi gave up, taking up the ownership or responsibility for the 2019 defeat? 2019 was 2 years back. Now, the answer to that is, oh, nobody raises questions about BJP. They are not having any elections. But the fact is that in the 25 years since the Gandhi family retook the Congress party, before that for a short interregnum of about 6 years, Narasimha Rao and Sitaram Kesari, both forgotten, cursed and buried by the Congress party now, they were presidents. But for the past 25 years, Congress party has had only Gandhi family members as presidents. But look at the BJP. Whatever you may say about them, but they've had at least 7 presidents in this time. Of those presidents, 3 are serving cabinet members in the Modi cabinet. That is Amit Shah, Rajnath Singh and Nitin Gadkari. That shows that party has depth, and now they have yet another president who has been a cabinet member. Congress today is in a situation where it doesn't even have a living former party president. This is an unsustainable situation. You might say, I don't want to be president. Have someone elected president. The answer to that is, ask BJP, why aren't they electing president? Because they have a president. Plus, they are winning. You are the underdog and you are declining. What applies to the BJP cannot apply to you. Now, I also know that Congress people will counter what I am saying about Rahul Gandhi with the following. Number one, who else can lead the Congress party and keep it together? Good point. I might even agree with it. Actually, I do agree with it. Number two, who else in the Congress party has the fire in his belly to fight the BJP and the RSS as frontally, as openly as Rahul Gandhi does? Good point. I will even concede that. Number three, all these G23 types, what are they doing for the party? What have they done for the party except take favors and largesse from it? And all they want right now is Rajya Sabha seats or some sinecures even when they are in the opposition. I will concede that also. So the counter to that, further counter to that is that when you look at all this and you walk with these points, you still end up in a cul-de-sac. You still end up at the end of the road with nowhere to go. And then again, the same questions come and stare you in the face. If that is the case, why does he not take over the party as the president? If that is the case, why does he not start rebuilding the party? Because the party is now declining and his vote bank is frittering away. Even his loyal vote bank is now being slowly taken away by other parties like NCP in Maharashtra and Kejriwal's Aam Aadmi Party in many other places. So my moment of truth last week, or epiphany as you call it, which helped me shed my fear of the opposition. Laugh at me if you so wish, but go ahead. What made me shed my fear of questioning the opposition or the Congress party or Rahul Gandhi in particular were these viral worthy pictures coming out of Kerala. And they all went viral. Because these pictures were viral worthy. Were they vote worthy? I don't know. We shall know in the course of time. And this reminded me of something that I had heard a long time back and which keeps coming back to me in some context or the other. Because these were such wonderful lines written by lyricist Majroo Sultanpuri for Dilip Kumar in that fine movie, Sagina. And the line was, Aag lagi hamri jhupadiya mein, hum gaavai malhar, dekh bhai kitne tamashe ki zindagani hamar. That my hut is on fire, but I am singing the merry rain raga of malhar. See how much fun is my life. That seems to be Rahul Gandhi's approach to life and politics right now. So I apologized to Majroo Saab for having stolen his line, But no Rahul Gandhi, no apologies to you, no sorry to you. It does look like this line was actually written for you.